Friends, you're listening to Irish Radio Network, USA, irishradio.com, worldwide. I am honored, indeed, to be able to start today's program with Her Excellency, Ambassador Geraldine Byrne Nason, Irish Ambassador to the United States. And Ambassador, you're very welcome indeed.
Well, thank you very much, Adrian. I'm delighted to be with you, particularly in this auspicious time of the year.
Is it ever? Now, I want to, first of all, you know, ask you, if you don't mind, to bring us back to your previous position here, because for a while, we were able to refer to you, indeed, even though you came from Drogheda, bread and butter there, as a New Yorker. We never thought you were going to move on. You, of course, being, you know, the ambassador and the permanent representative of Ireland to the United Nations, beginning back in 2017. Can you tell us a little bit about that position and the significance of it?
Well, I left a little bit of my heart in Manhattan there on the East River, Adrian. So once a New Yorker, always a New Yorker. And of course, that's true of Drogheda too. But my time in New York was really a fascinating, extraordinary time for Ireland. You know, we've had a very long commitment to our role at the United Nations. It was one of the first ways we expressed ourselves internationally at the global foreign policy level, if you like. So when I arrived in 2017, there was a big challenge out there to have Ireland elected as a temporary elected member of the UN Security Council, an opportunity that comes up once in a generation. And it's something that Ireland has very much prized as a key moment along the way to express ourselves internationally and also to take on added responsibility. So for the first couple of years in New York, I was an election agent for Ireland. I was collecting organizing votes to get us 2/3 support of the UN member states so that Ireland could sit at the very iconic horseshoe table in the UN building and represent our views, our values, our principles, really, for 2 years. So we were successfully elected in 2020 and went on to take up that much prized seat, which was a contested election. So we were very lucky. We ran against Canada and Norway and were elected for 2 years. And there, I think, we stood up for the principles and the values we said we would. We had a big humanitarian vocation, which I think is deeply embedded in all Irish people, our empathy for those who are in conflict, who are in crisis, particularly at the Security Council, where we have 60% of the work you do at that table focuses on Africa. And of course, we have a long Irish tradition on the ground in Africa. Our missionaries now are exceptionally well-respected development actors. So we did a huge amount of work in Africa. We also, of course, were responsible while we were on the Security Council for very important initiatives on Syria, on Iran, on the nuclear deal on Iran, on trying to advance the role of women in peace and security, and also make sure that the awful development that we had while I was sitting at the table, the invasion of Ukraine by Russia, that we would stand up for the democracy and the sovereignty that is so prized by the people of Ukraine. So it was a varied and extraordinary experience, and I was so lucky, privileged in many ways, to lead an amazing team in New York, but supported hugely by our Minister Simon Coveney at the time, then of course, Micheál Martin back in that role again, Minister Martin. We also had the support of Uachtaráin na hÉireann and of the Taoiseach, all both in the campaigns and then in terms of what we worked on the Security Council. And if I might finish up with one last thing, Adrian, on that work, is to say that we took a few risks while we're at the table, because I think as diplomats we like to represent our country, that feisty, courageous voice that comes from the island. So on issues like climate and security, which I know a lot of people understand the impact of climate change on people's livelihoods, on young men, for example, in the Sahel or in Northern Africa, leaving agricultural jobs or land where plants don't, crops don't grow anymore. We tried to show that that has a big impact on all our security. And we got pushback there a little bit at the council table, but I think it was very important to show we had the courage of our convictions. And we did that also in relation to a big conflict that was underway in Ethiopia. So we were courageous as well as busy.
Yes, there's nothing to disagree with. There are a couple of items that I would like to ask you about. As chair of the United Nations Commission on Status of Women, the CSW, for 2018 and 2019, I know you've made reference to it, but what was the challenge and what was new about that, if we go back to your appointment there?
Well, the challenge really was that the Commission on the Status of Women is the only global body that is what we like to say norm setting. So, you know, the results of the work of that commission that meets over a period of a month every year is critical. And it's actually the second biggest event every year at the UN. So after the General Assembly, you have at that commission about 10,000 delegates come to New York. So a big responsibility. The object of the work when I was there was looking at women's access in two very, very significant areas. One was in terms of women's rights and entitlements to land ownership. It was looking at rural women right across the globe and the degree to which their labour is reflected in their rights to the results of their labour and in their legal entitlements. You know, in Ireland, I always say our European Union membership helped us progress so significantly economically and socially, and women were big beneficiaries of that. Not the case all across the globe. So for the first year, we were looking at the situation of rural women in particular and their overall economic empowerment and entitlements. We know that we're going to be depending particularly on the Global South for our food security in decades to come in the next part of our this century. And we need to be sure that women are fully integrated into the power structures economically in their countries. That was the first year. The second year, the big debate was around women's access to public services, which of course is very fundamental whether you're living in Manhattan or you're living in Ouagadougou in Africa. You need to be sure that women have access not just to healthcare, but very importantly in my view, to education. And that for us as an Irish country of course goes to the heart of everything we believe in the value of education for helping to shape the future of a community and a society. So we worked really hard to try and encourage that the systems in place, the public access systems in place for healthcare, for education, for social welfare, were stepped up in those parts of the world where women are most vulnerable. Were we successful? We got a result, remarkably got a result in both years, even though there was a lot of resistance from some parts of the globe. But I will say that our situation in relation to women in education has been pushed back since COVID. And that was, of course, the work I did on the commission was pre-COVID. We now have hundreds of millions of young girls out of school since COVID, a time bomb ticking for their societies. And, of course, then we've special cases that have developed, like Afghanistan, where women have simply ruled out from going to school. The Taliban will not allow them to go to school. And we have a situation developing in Iran where Iran was expelled indeed from the Commission on the Status of Women long after I had left it, but nonetheless as a response to the way they have reacted to protests in women's interests on the ground in Iran. So the Commission on the Status of Women was an extraordinarily fulfilling time for me. It was an important responsibility, but it also reflected Ireland's values. And I'm very proud to represent a country now where we have women operating at the highest levels, from government through to business and, of course, importantly, in our communities. And I still credit the European Union for having given us that wonderful momentum back in the 70s.
Yes. And in fact, though, you were no stranger, indeed, politically to the European Union. Ambassador to Ireland's deputy permanent representative. So that was back from 2005 to 11. You spent a good time there. What was the main in going back through the years? Is there a pivotal point that you can point to, or was it being dragged along? That's Mayo lingo, by the way, in case you haven't noticed the ambassador. Was there something, or is just a process?
Well, look, Adrian, I think over time, as we look now to 50 years since Ireland became a member of the European Union, if we look at the big picture, it has been transformative for Ireland economically, remarkably. This year again, Ireland is the fastest growing economy in the Eurozone. When we joined what was then the economic community back in 1974, we were literally, our GDP, our income, our national income was half that of the member states of the then European community. We're now in many instances doubling the performance of some of our partners in the EU. We've had an extraordinary trajectory. It's built up over time. I think the important thing is that Ireland has become a constructive, goodwill player at the European Union table. We help to shape the regulations now. We're a net contributor to the European Union budget that we benefited from so long ago. But we have made very good investment with that European support. And personally, when I left Brussels in 2011, I went back to take a role in the Taoiseach's department as the Secretary General for European Affairs when we were in a very difficult economic situation. It was when we were locked out of the markets. The EU and IMF introduced a program and we worked hard. It was very tough, and I think we all suffered through that program. And I know that there's traces, indeed the marks of that difficult period are still there in our communities and in our economy, in some parts of our economy. But Ireland rebounded, and that was with the support of our European partners. So I think over time, the credit in terms of our European Union membership is really quite extraordinary. And now we stand out as a success story, almost a poster success story for membership of the European Union. And we find ourselves as part of the experienced elders almost in terms of members of the European Union, always speaking up for the vulnerable, always looking out for those like Ukraine who now aspire to be members of the European Union. And we fully support those ambitions and those aspirations, because we know what it can do in terms of transforming a society.
Ambassador, I just, again, being aware of your time, which we appreciate, the United States, as the largest source of foreign direct investment into Ireland, is and has been an ongoing, sometimes challenged, undertaking, and with fears that perhaps, there may well be change and some tax raises or penalties. Sometimes we forget, though, that Ireland is no slouch when it comes to investments in the United States were almost on par with the reciprocal, I wouldn't say arrangement, but the way it has been working out. Isn't that something that we somehow we brush over very lightly?
You know, Adrian, I'm glad you asked me that, because I am constantly saying how surprised and how delighted I was when I came. I'm the 19th ambassador to the United States, and I know my predecessors all worked to deliver on this. But to find that Ireland is the ninth biggest foreign direct investor in the United States is pretty remarkable. If you consider, you know, we're number nine, you have the G7, so you're already accounting for seven huge or six huge economies if you take the US out of that number. We're remarkable in the investment we make here. We're in all 50 states, Irish-owned companies in all 50 states, and we have over 650 companies that are Irish-owned who are here in the United States investing in jobs, creating jobs. They employ today well over 100,000 people across a whole range of industries, from construction, in education, in medical devices, software, energy, environment. It's a huge level of investment. And I think it is a very good reflection, the way you put it yourself, of a sort of a two-way street that operates. The United States is Ireland's number one foreign direct investor. We have over 900 so welcome U.S. companies in Ireland, and they employ well over 200,000 people in Ireland. And of course, the attraction of Ireland is also that we are a superb open gateway into the European single market, where you have over 5 million people. But the investments on the ground in Ireland create directly and indirectly well over 300,000 jobs every day for the people in Ireland. So I think it's a superb two-way relationship. Every time I travel here in the United States, you know, to all of our 8 representations that we now have, shows how big we are on the ground in this great country. I meet investors who want to go to Ireland, companies who have had excellent experiences working with the IDA, with Enterprise Ireland. And I'm meeting amazing young Irish companies here making headway and creating jobs for American workers. So I think you're right. It is a two-way street.
And one that we, I don't know, maybe it's in our genes, but if this were, I think, any of the other ethnic to be shouting from the rooftops, however, long may it last. Of course, this will be your first St. Patrick's Day serving as Ambassador, Ireland's Ambassador to the United States. And you're having a very special guest, no stranger to you, of course, in Washington, none other than the Taoiseach. And tell us about him.
Well, look, it is, as you say, it's my maiden voyage as an ambassador to the United States, and it's such an extraordinarily special time. It's already St. Patrick's season here, I can tell you, Adrian. The Taoiseach will be arriving early next week, and we have a fun-packed program for him. He doesn't have 2 minutes of spare time during his program. He will have a superb economic program just dealing with or addressing a lot of those issues you and I just touched on there about the investment in both directions, meeting the top end of those business actors who want to talk to him about where Ireland is headed economically. So we spent a whole day doing that. We have another day when he will be looking at some of the important issues around the celebration, the marking of the 25th anniversary of peace on the island. He will make some remarks at Georgetown University, where the former Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton, will be present, and they'll be looking in particular at the amazing role that the women of Northern Ireland played in delivering peace. He'll also have a number of visits to other institutions that day, and of course we'll host him at the Irish residence for St. Patrick's Day with the Irish community and with our American friends. And the big crescendo of the week is the moment, of course, where we see both the Vice President and the man from County Louth, as I like to call him, President Joe Biden himself. President Biden, as you know, Adrian, we both share him because he has roots in Mayo, but he also has the Flanagan family, his maternal grandmother from County Louth. So we look forward to a really excellent visit with the Taoiseach and President Biden on St. Patrick's Day. And, you know, it all comes together with that wonderful moment with the Shamrock Bowl, which I've seen on TV, like everyone growing up, you watch that as that starry-eyed moment when we celebrate the all people of Irish descent and affinity around the world. And I'm just amazed that I'll be in the room where it's happening.
I want to thank you for your time, because my boss here, Anya, is speaking with your boss down there, Norma, and saying, get off the phone. This lady has a plane.
Well, we're both obedient types, Adrian, so we better do what
we're told. I just want to end on this note, Ambassador. There, I was getting very hot under the collar there for a moment while you were referring to the President as being a proud loud, and I said, wait, is she going to acknowledge? And you did. So we're the best of them.
I'm a diplomat, Adrian. I'm a diplomat, after all. Okay, thanks very much, Adrian. Thank you.
Very happy St. Patrick's season, Ambassador. And I know that you'll be busy.
As well. Okay, happy St. Patrick's Day.
Go meal my good. Thank you. And friends, you're listening to Irish Radio Network USA, irishradio.com worldwide.